You're listening to Unterwegs, the En Route podcast, where we talk about what it means to be en route with Jesus in our day-to-day life. Navigating life and faith in our complex and changing society is hard. Our goal is to keep you unterwegs with Jesus, moving forward as you follow God's calling on your life. Welcome to episode 39. I'm your host, Mike Piccinato, and today is part two of our five-question series with Marcus Dipsilas and Lauren Usherwood Dipsilas. We started this 2 weeks ago, and we only made it through question one on our first episode. Today, we're going to get to questions two through five. We did record this all in one sitting, and then I've divided it into two episodes during the editing process. If you're listening to this episode as a standalone episode, you may feel that it starts a little bit abruptly as we jump right into question two. But we're going to do that now and let Marcus and Lauren continue to talk about their life as they answer these questions. Well, let's move on to question number two. We can't spend 40 minutes on each question, but the second question is, what's one of the most important risks you have taken and why?
The biggest risk that I took was marrying Marcus. And I will just be very honest, marriage is scary. It's a huge decision and it was a risk, but good one. I'm glad that I did it.
I think the biggest risk that I took was to take a gap year after I graduated from my bachelor's degree. Gap years in Asia are not common in general. It's even less common. It's almost weird to do so after you graduate from a degree. And
the expectation being you either go on to study more or you start working.
Yes, especially because I had also done a degree overseas. So now it's time to see what comes of that. And I had, my parents were encouraging. They didn't understand at the time. I think sometimes now they still don't, but they're okay with that. And they trust that God is leading and that I'm following God's leading. And that's what matters to them. But it was that risk, I think. And sure enough, that one gap year didn't stay a gap year. It became actually 4 years of not having the consistency or stability that people see as needed for a graduate to enter and integrate into society. My education was very much on the go, and it was a risk. It definitely was a risk, financial risk too. Here I am.
And what is one decision you wish you didn't make or you hadn't made?
It's very hard to narrow it down to just one. Yeah. I think when I think about the decisions that impact me the most, they're typically relational decisions. At this point in my life, I don't have regrets in terms of like really bad financial decisions or bad investments. There are a couple, but not to the point where I'm like, oh, that ruined, you know, whatever. There were some friendships that I think could have, that I could have worked on differently or approached differently in my early 20s. If I could go back, I would do things differently. And those, I think, are the decisions that I wish I didn't make. And a lot of them, most of them actually have to do with cross-cultural relationships. So cross-cultural friendships and what that looked like in learning about the other person and not intentionally hurting people. Because we can unintentionally hurt people, but sometimes we can also spitefully hurt them. And I had chosen the latter a couple of times, doing things I knew would hurt people. So I would go back and change those things.
Most recently, when Marcus and I transitioned back, we were flying from Malaysia to the U.S. And when we landed, It was a lot coming fresh off of moving in a pandemic. There's a lot of work when you're moving your family to a different country. So there were some decisions that I felt like saved us time and money. But if I could go back, I would honor our transition by giving us more time without an agenda. So maybe that looks like putting money into an Airbnb and staying there for a week, or, you know, giving yourself the space that you need. I would have done that differently.
Sometimes those return transitions are really hard to process because the people we're going back to view us coming back in a way that's different than our transition. I mean, I know almost every time we go back, my family wants to get together within hours or days of us landing, and you're still
shaking. Which is understandable.
Jet, like, absolutely.
For them.
100%.
Yes. But it's a lot for...
It's a lot for the person transitioning.
Yeah.
And trying to navigate that is tricky.
Yes.
I found, because they feel insulted if you don't want to get together right away, and you feel out of sorts or incapable of engaging properly.
Yeah.
And you're going back so quickly. So it's, those are challenges.
There's a line in a meme that I'm going to adopt and start using, but it's based off just the most recent Oscars after party where Caitlyn Jenner ran into Lady Gaga and asked her why that she had not seen Lady Gaga at Starbucks recently. And Lady Gaga very politely said, I've switched baristas. And it's kind of this like excuse, like, no. And so I think I'm going to use that. Like, why won't you meet with me? Why don't I see you? I've switched baristas. So I think it just made me think of that. It's like, how do you say no to the people who like want to, like, I want to see you? It's like, maybe not immediately, but maybe not.
Yeah. Well, it's a different situation when you're coming back for a short amount of time. Or we just had friends that came and visited Berlin after spending several years out of Berlin, and they were back for a week, and they said, we will never do that again. Because too many people knew they were coming back, and so their schedules got so full. It was just one appointment after another of seeing people. I'm like, well, that's not restful either.
Which is how I used to live my life. Literally how I used to live my life. Until I got married, and a few years later, and now I'm like, I don't have to tell everyone that I'm back.
Are you an extrovert, Marcus?
I am very much an extrovert, yes.
And are you an introvert, Lauren?
Yes, but it is more than just the extrovert-introvert divide. But yes, I am. I am more introverted. I would say I'm an extroverted introvert. Yeah. So I need my quiet. But I love, I also sometimes find energy and, you know, with people and certain conversations.
I wasn't trying to oversimplify that, but that's what I see happen a lot.
No, I'm a stereotypical extrovert. I fit the description.
Yeah. I'm not afraid to give my yes to a few things so that I can, or let me re-say that. I'm not afraid to say no to certain things so I can give a yes to the people who are my first people. And I think that was difficult for Marcus to maybe accept or to see as valid and not hurting other people's feelings. But that was definitely challenging for us, because I wanted him to tell me, like, who are the three people who are the most important? And he's like, I can't rate them.
I can't.
But I would say, like, I can't give my time to all of these people. There's got to be some that are more important. So it's still an ongoing journey for both of us, but.
Although we very recently heard about the German style of social, like, capacity for social interaction.
And maybe you can speak to this.
Yeah,
one.
And recognizing their capacity and saying no to things. And I think Lauren really jived with
it. Well, I guess I would say two things. One is something a ministry mentor told me early on in ministry, and he said, Mike, every yes to something is a no to something else. There's only so much you. So by me accepting that, I'm automatically taking time away from something else. So make sure that your yeses aren't saying no to other valuable things. That's just kind of a thought that's always ticking, even sometimes to the frustration of other people. There's over 100,000 Ukrainian refugees in the city of Berlin right now. The natural temptation and just the compassionate response is to do something. We have to do something. But in the back of my mind, there's also this, yes, but once we say yes to too many opportunities to engage with refugees, we're saying no to the primary calling God has given us. So how do we bring the two together in a way that fits and that can be pulling back on the reins for some people who want to move forward and in quick ways to respond to things. And that's where I think just team has to come together and as a team say, yeah, but this is a good pivot. This is a healthy pivot. We can say no to some of these other prime things now to engage in immediate needs. And yeah, just those general things. As far as German relational capacity, most Germans think we have room in our life for 3 to 5 friends. Because if I'm a friend with you,
that
I'm a friend.
Something.
That means something.
Right. Right.
And that means we're going to be in contact with each other.
Yeah.
If not weekly, at least monthly. Mm-hmm. At least monthly, we're hanging out and spending time together. And if you just start to think through your general week, how many people can I get together with and really have, not like, let's grab a cup of coffee and go, but sit down for hours with on a regular basis. And so Germans call very few people friends. And the other people are acquaintances, but that comes without the relational commitment. And you'll see Germans, like, it's a big deal to call a German your friend. And you'll see them react funny if you call them your friend and then you don't fulfill the relational requirements of it. So you have to use the words carefully because they
As
come
you
with commitment.
Should. This is where I think that's so, I think that's so beautiful. I mean, of course I'm taking, you know, I've not experienced, yes, definitely have rose-tinted glasses to what you were explaining, but I think my own country, my own people, my dear Americans can learn and grow so much in that of choosing our words carefully, that our words and our actions match when it comes to
friends. Well, our Facebook
friends
are how many friends we have, right?
Yeah, I have 3,000. Social media has played a very interesting role in all of that. But yeah, I don't know. Friendship means something, you know? I mean, even if we look in scripture, like, it's not just some piddly little thing that we pick up and then we let go when it gets hard or when somebody offends us. We need friends, no matter what season of life you're in, you know? So, yeah. Anyways, friendship is very important.
Lauren had a very strong reaction to the next question when I was running through them with her earlier.
That's but why she's been affirming your questions when they've been coming. That's a good question.
Yeah, that's right.
It's Pavlov's reprogramming.
If I like something, I'll tell you. And if I don't, I'll tell you too.
No, but I think your reaction is a good answer to the next question. And that is, what role does faith play in your life?
You want to start first?
And share your reaction.
And share my reaction.
What was your reaction?
Sure. Okay, my reaction as I remember it. And you can both help me if maybe I'm remembering wrong, because I tend to do that. But my reaction was that faith should not be a role. Faith is, well, I'm not sure what it is, if I could exchange another word for it. But if you reduce it to a role, probably doesn't have enough foundation in your life. For me, I guess faith is, I don't even know. It's so hard for me to think of.
Let's go back to your play illustration.
My play illustration. Faith. Oh, yes. This is what I was thinking, actually. This isn't really the play illustration. But faith for me is where my intellect bends. I'm a very rational person. And it's a huge strength of mine. It's also a weakness, of course, like any strength. But when I feel that the Lord is telling me to do something, or, you know, feel led in a certain way, whether it's with people or a place, I know that I am really needing to walk in faith, or to exercise faith, or to ask for faith when I sense that my intellect has to bow and surrender in order to move forward in faith. That's where I sense it. That's where I see it in my life. So it's not a role. But I can't think of, if I think of a better word, I'll interrupt you. I can't think of it right now. But
you used the word foundation before, this foundational.
Sure, yeah.
I draw from my country's roots when it comes to language, the word for faith and spirituality, there's not a distinction. I think that often we can see faith and spirituality differently. So for me, faith is my spirituality. I am not a churchgoer. That is not how my spirituality stays alive. I think for many people, going to church is an indication that they are Christian. I'm not against going to church, but I think that the system and the way church currently is doesn't help make my faith robust. I find the robustness of faith in conversation with others about how God is moving in their life and what the Spirit is leading them to, or, you know, recent thoughts or recent ponderings they've had that might have an implication on how they live their lives. Those to me are faith conversations. You know, I still read and listen to people that I consider teachers. You know, I'll sit down with people that I respect and really draw from their perspective, even if we are on different spectrums of the political understandings of the world, or some theological, or even ideas on sexuality and how to vote and how to be and how to treat other people, even if we're different, but we're engaged in the conversation. I know I can learn something from a few good friends of mine who were different. So the role that spirituality plays in my life is that it pretty much governs what I do, like my choices. You know, this trip, we are freshly moving back to the U.S. I cannot work. We don't make enough income to rent a place of our own. We don't have enough income to live in America. And then we're dropping money on me traveling to Europe. That doesn't make sense. But when it came to the question of, you know, who am I before God and what this trip would do or mean or set my focus for my 30s or give me a vision for what is coming, then it became a relevant trip. It became a question not about where's the money going to come from, but what can God accomplish through this? And I think the last 3 weeks have been, it's been phenomenal. The connections that I've been able to re-engage in, meeting the first Syrian refugee that I'd ever known, that I made friends with when he was a refugee in Turkey, meeting him in his new home in Germany, reconnecting. He's the one that connected me to all the Syrian refugees I know now. The reason why we had a Syrian refugee living with us in our first year of marriage during the pandemic, you know, he is the person who opened my eyes to so many things, and to be able to meet with him again after all these years, to remember that's my calling, at that time, what God did through that. Those are crucial things. And so, yeah, it governs the decisions I make more than just hitting a category on a government form.
I recently finished reading Bonhoeffer's Creation and the Fall. And
yes!
Such a great book, isn't it?
So good. Oh, it's so good.
It took me a while because I was slogging through it in German. And so there are oftentimes I'm like, oh, okay, I've got to look that word up. But like one of the greatest concepts in there, there's so many great concepts in there, but one of them is just this idea that, so God shapes man out of the dust of the earth, and then he breathes into his nostrils the breath of life, and then man becomes a living being. And so Bonhoeffer says, man is body and spirit. You cannot have a man without a spirit, just a body, and you cannot have a spirit without a body. They're integrally combined. And I was just thinking of that as you were talking about faith is my spirituality. It's this life inside of me.
Yeah. And for me, church is not in a building. Yeah.
Right.
Church community matters more to me than church attendance. So therefore, when I say I'm not a churchgoer, it's not that I'm, you know, not brother to other believers.
So what comes next for you guys? What adventures are on the horizon, or is it too soon to ask?
As our good friend Stephen Jones would say, we are letting the new beginnings breathe. I think there are some little tiny green petals that are not petals, leaves that have poked through the soil.
Shoots.
Yeah. Something new that is beginning to come that I can, sometimes I think, oh, maybe this is, I can get a sense, you know, in my gut, like, oh, maybe this new rhythm or this job that I'm in, maybe this is part of the new beginning that's coming, but it's too soon yet to know how long or if it is the thing or if it's making way for something else. And I'm okay with that. I kind of like the faith that's required in this season, the amount of intellect that I have to bow before the Lord and let those new beginnings breathe.
So this question to me has like the undertones of like, what's the next season? And I want to acknowledge and point out that in my both cultural but also literal upbringing, in Malaysia, we do not have the four seasons. And so I just want to acknowledge that that's different in how I see seasons of change and what is the start of a new season. Because we don't have things dying. Things always grow. So literally tomorrow could be a new season if you made it out to be that way. So which for me, I'm going back to school. I think the vision I have for my 30s is to refine some of the things I picked up in my 20s. I've never seen myself as like an artist or, I mean, I call myself creative, but I've never really like leaned into it intentionally. It's always kind of been, oh, this is one of my skills and I can use it for ministry kind of thing. But I think in my 30s, I want to lean into that. What does it mean to be creative? What does it mean to be a creative? To be creating, to have generative thinking. And then to go back to school to also stimulate the mind. I don't think I can fully create without my mind being worked on or stretched or engaged even. So I'm going to seminary, going back to school. Yeah. I aspire to be an ethicist. I don't know, whatever. Whatever comes in that direction.
Let your new beginnings
breathe. Yeah, I'm just letting them breathe.
Often when I talk with artists, they've finished one project, but the seeds of the next project are there, right? And so when you ask them what's coming next, they're like, well, I've got this idea about this next project. And sometimes that never comes into being.
Right.
Sometimes it takes time.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes those seeds just have to stay dormant for a while, and then it's time.
Yeah.
I wish to write a book.
Yeah.
That's my wish. Talk about my gap year that turned into four to emphasize learning over getting a degree. And I'm very much in support of a traditional four-year program. I think there's a lot to offer there. But what does it mean to learn once you are done? I want to be 60 and to say, I am learning this. And I think it was the words of Michelangelo, Ancora Imparo. I believe those are the words. Still I'm learning. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I want to be ripe old and still be learning. So that is my vision for what's next.
Is there anything else you guys would want to add? We've gone through the questions, but anything that's come up?
Just want to say to anyone listening who's going through transition, whether it's cultural or a new job or marriage or something, it gets better.
Until it doesn't.
Well, it gets better if you put in the work, but it gets better. And it's important to have hope. I think I can be quite, as my wife tells me, I can be quite negative with my negative energy. that I see as worst case scenario preparation, but it is fatalistic and overly determined. The cards are set and there's nothing's gonna change. But as I'm seeing, that's not true. It does get better, and that's a painful but also hopeful statement, because that means it's probably gonna get worse before it gets better. But yeah, what I have to say.
Thanks. Well, guys, thanks for joining us today. It's been fun to have a conversation with you, and I'm excited for people to be able to hear it.
Thank you, Mike, for having me.
Thanks for listening. One of our goals at Envision Berlin is to produce resources that are helpful and beneficial. And I hope that you find that this 5-question series gives you perspectives and ways of thinking of things that are helpful for you as well. If you have ideas of people that we should interview, feel free to send them or any other comments or questions to podcast@envisionberlin.com. You can also join our Discord server, and you'll find the links to that below in the show notes. Unterwegs, the En Route podcast, is a production of Envision Berlin e.V. and is produced, recorded, and edited at Sprig, Envision Berlin's creative space. Podcast music is by Mike Picanato.